Hello, I'm Kyle Willoughby. Joining me is Claire White.
Hello.
And this is Dragons, Sexy Robots, and Adventures, a Nerd Manual. We're here to discuss new nerd creations, how they were made, and explore the roots of the characters and stories. Today we're talking about Doctor Strange. It's a new Marvel movie came out. It was released on November 4th, 2016. It was directed by Scott Derrickson. And it's actually the 14th film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
They've been busy.
They've been so... hearing that number attached to it, it makes you really like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
It's been a lot of these movies.
It's 2008, right, is when they started with Iron Man?
Yeah, yeah. It's just crazy. So a little background on Doctor Strange. Doctor Strange is a master of the mystic arts. He's a superhero in the Marvel Universe, but he doesn't really normally deal with your typical supervillains. He's kind of guarding the world against threats that other heroes, like heroes who aren't magic, can't deal with.
Yeah, other dimensions. He's guarding against people invading from other dimensions.
Yeah. He's also got the sickest goatee in comics, and he's got a really swanky brownstone in Greenwich Village, which I wonder what the rent on that is.
He got it in the 60s.
He owns it, too. That's true. He's not paying rent. Claire's going to be telling us about the history of Doctor Strange, and I will be talking about the production of the movie, which just came out. So, Claire, why don't you take it away?
All right. Well, Doctor Strange made his first appearance in the Marvel Comics as a backup feature in Strange Tales, number 110 in 1963. And by backup feature, I mean that in the comic, there was the first story and the second story, which was normally a little bit shorter.
Yeah, it was like the kind of bonus story.
Yeah, so he shared the comic with the Human Torch, actually. And he was called Doctor Strange because he was appearing in Strange Tales. That's how the name came up.
Marvel, you're so clever.
That was a genuine laugh. apparently he was originally going to be called Mr. Strange, but they thought that was too similar to Mr. Fantastic. So that's how he became a doctor.
Yeah, and why would you want, if you had to choose between a doctor and or a Mr. Strange, you would want a doctor. You know, that's like Dr. Pepper or Mr. Pibb. No one wants Mr. Pibb. You want Dr. Pepper.
Oh, well,
he's more qualified.
Maybe that's what they were thinking. And by they, I mean Stan Lee and Steve Ditko were the co-creators. And if you haven't heard of them, Stan Lee is probably the most famous comic book writer, I would say. He created a ton of the Marvel characters, including Spider-Man, which is probably the most famous. Yeah. And Steve Ditko was the artist, and he is also credited with helping develop and create Spider-Man. Yeah. And they're both huge names, especially when it comes to Marvel characters.
Yeah.
Stan Lee, however, admitted that the idea came mostly from Ditko, but he still billed as a co-creator.
Oh, really? Ditko created Squirrel Girl as well.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
So good.
Circles.
So Doctor Strange was inspired by the Shandu the Magician radio show from the 1930s. And I'm going to link to it on the Facebook page. It's campy fun. You'll see what I mean if you listen to it. And that was about an American-born Frank Chandler who learned occult secrets from a yogi in India. He was known as Shandu, and he possessed several supernatural skills.
Nice.
So that's what Doctor Strange was modeled on. And when you're listening to the show, you hear a lot of tie-ins.
This is the 30s or 20s?
30s. It ran for a while, too.
Okay.
So in the first comics, they established Strange's origin story, much like the movie, and it was a little bit different. So he was an arrogant, brilliant neurosurgeon who later became a master sorcerer. And when he was a surgeon, he wasn't a good person, and the comics make that very clear. Like, you see him smoking a cigarette, and they come in and they say, "This poor person needs surgery," and he's like, "If they can't pay, they should leave."
Yeah.
It's very funny in that, like, 60s
camp. Yeah,
that camp.
60s, like, right on the nose.
Yeah, like, there's no, like, subtlety at all. But he got into a car crash, and it really messed up his hands, and so he couldn't operate anymore. So he searched high and low for a cure, and he ended up going into the Far East, to Nepal, and he found the Ancient One, who he had heard could cure him. And at first, the Ancient One says, "I can't cure you, but I can take you on as my disciple," and Strange fights it. There's a bit of a back and forth. But at the end of the day, he accepts the Ancient One's tutelage and he becomes a master sorcerer. And he proves his worth and banishes his old selfish ways and becomes a good person.
He finds himself in Nepal.
Yeah, that never happens to anyone, right?
Nope,
that's never in any stories.
Never, no.
In these early comics, a lot of key characters are introduced. The Dread Dormammu of the Dark Dimension, who is one
familiar.
Of... he's in the movie a little bit. He's one of Doctor Strange's top adversaries.
I love all the names of the strange characters.
Yeah.
That's what the best part about Doctor Strange to me is everyone's crazy names.
Well, and yeah, it's such a trippy 60s comic.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
James, the producer, and I were talking about how they really commit to calling him the Dread,
the
Dormammu.
Dread. He's never just Dormammu or even just D for short.
No, never D. It's the Dread Dormammu.
It's like the Lord Voldemort.
Oh, yeah. We also meet his niece, Clea. And by his niece, I mean the Dread Dormammu's niece.
Dread Dormammu has a fire head. How does he have a niece?
He has a brother.
Makes sense, I guess.
Yeah.
It all follows.
And Clea becomes Doctor Strange's primary love interest for quite a while, actually. Also, we meet Doctor Strange's sidekick, Wong, his other major enemy, the Baron Mordo, who, I can never say his name right, Chiwetel
Ejiofor, right?
Ejiofor plays in the movie.
Yeah.
And he is also trained by the Ancient One, but turned bad.
Okay.
And he appears throughout the entire run of the Doctor Strange comics. He's always being brought back.
Yeah, yeah.
So after Doctor Strange becomes a master of the dark arts, he returns to New York. He lives in Sanctum Sanctorum on Bleecker Street in Greenwich Village with Wong, who I mentioned earlier is his manservant. And he protects the world. So when these comics were first being published, the village was the center of the beat and art scene.
Greenwich Village.
And Strange actually kind of became an emblem of the counterculture that was happening. He was an alternative to the more conventional superheroes.
Yeah, you know, the more macho Captain America,
Wolverine.
He's like a little smarter.
It was smarter and so different.
Yeah.
I mean, the comics look so different from the normal superhero comics. The artist Ditko synthesized ideas from surrealism and cubism, and it gave the work this really, we were talking about, like, otherworldly, weird quality.
What I didn't read, like, a ton of the 60s Ditko comics, but what I did read, I really, really liked the art.
Oh, it's so different. Even now, it's different. And we're, like, we see stuff like that now because comics have become so diverse, and there's all these independent comics, but at the time, it was so different. So different, in fact, that a lot of readers thought that the people making the comic were experimenting with drugs. And like the statement from Marvel was like, I'm pretty sure our writers aren't doing drugs. As far as we know, they're not.
I'm pretty sure they were.
That's what the readers thought. But Marvel was like, no.
Yeah,
but the comics are trippy and weird. And if you think of the 60s at the time, like the Beatles off in India, like tripping on LSD and that stuff. It fits so well into all of that. So from here, I'm going to do select parts of Doctor Strange's story that I think fits well into from either the movie or I just like, because I think we've talked about this with other superheroes that we've covered. He was written in the 60s.
Yeah.
And so much has happened to Doctor Strange since he was first created that I can't fit
can't
all of it.
You can't cover everything.
Do I think you would be
even
interested.
Should,
Like, it's a lot of, like, weird back and forth stuff. And Doctor Strange is so trippy and weird. But I'm going to cover my favorite parts here.
Yeah.
So after the Stan Lee and Steve Ditko run, he got his own self-titled series written by Roy Thomas and Gene Colan, and it took Doctor Strange in a darker direction. It emphasized horror aspects of the character, pitted him against a cult, and that's a direction Doctor Strange can go a lot and very easily.
Yeah, that's one of the cool things about him is his stories can be a little more like cosmic horror than other superheroes can, which is, it's a cool direction, I think, for a comic book to go in.
And really interesting bad guys that are different from the typical fare.
Yeah.
In 1971, Roy Thomas and Ross Andrew created the Defenders. This was the first incarnation of the Defenders, which is a group of superheroes working together. And it consisted of Doctor Strange, Namor, the Submariner, and the Hulk. And they were also later joined by the Silver Surfer.
That is a high-powered superhero team.
Yeah, it is. And they went on for a while. It started in 1971, and it was disbanded in 1983.
I can't imagine anything being a threat to Doctor Strange, the Hulk, or the Silver Surfer. I don't know much about Namor the Submariner.
Our producer told me he's like the Aquaman of the Marvel Universe.
Aquaman.
I haven't read anything about him either. But yes, very powerful team.
Yeah, there's some big boys on that team, man.
And this is one of my favorite stories about Doctor Strange. In 1972, Stephen Englehart and Frank Brunner wrote an anthology series, and it's a crazy series. Dr. Strange learned that the Ancient One was going to be used by a vessel for a monster's return, so he killed the Ancient One, but that was at the Ancient One's request, and then he became the new Sorcerer Supreme and the primary mystical protector of the Marvel Universe.
High drama.
Yeah, very high drama. And it also took him on a journey back through time that ended with the creation of the universe and suggested that he met God. Now, this was offensive to religious readers, and Stanley hadn't read it. But once he read it, he kind of freaked out and ordered that Englehart and Brunner print a retraction saying it wasn't God with a capital G, but a God in the comic.
Yeah.
So instead of doing that, Englehart and Brunner, they wrote a letter from a quote-unquote minister in Texas who loved the story and wasn't offended at all. And apparently they even went to Texas to mail the letter so it came from Texas. And Marvel was so delighted by the letter that they printed it. And they dropped the retraction.
That's amazing that they did that.
For art. I'm going to mention just a few of my favorite stories from here. One major plot point that I read and really enjoyed is when Doctor Strange and a group of vampire hunters, including Blade, kill Marvel's Dracula.
Oh, cool. I didn't even know Marvel had a Dracula.
Yeah, they do.
They used to
not.
And
he comes up against Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
A few times.
They used to not be able to put Draculas or vampires in their comics because of the Comics Code Authority.
Oh, really?
It was deemed too scary.
Well, in the 80s, they could. Yeah. In 89, there's a graphic novel called Doctor Strange and Doctor Doom, Triumph and Torment, and it's considered one of the best Marvel stories ever published.
I've heard of it. I haven't read it, but I really want to.
I'm halfway through it, and it is really good. But basically, Doctor Strange, through a series of events, is honor-bound to accept a request from Doctor Doom, and they go to hell to rescue Doctor Doom's mother. And the story that most people think is the best overall look at Doctor Strange, and apparently the movie is mostly based on this and the early comics, is called The Oath by Brian K. Vaughan. I know we both loved it.
Yeah.
It was written in 2006, and in this story, we follow Doctor Strange as he tries to find a cure for Wong's terminal brain cancer.
Yeah. And that was a really good comic.
It's a great comic. And if you want to dabble in the character, I actually suggest this as a good starting point.
Yeah.
Because it gives a bit of the backstory and everything.
Yeah,
and
yeah. It's like, you know, you get a page of his origin story, and that's all you need, though. It doesn't need to go all like...
No, yeah, exactly. And it also introduces the Night Nurse, who is an emergency doctor for superheroes. Rachel McAdams plays her in the movie, and she also becomes one of Doctor Strange's love interests.
That's a confusing thing with Rachel McAdams being the Night Nurse, too, I feel like, because in Daredevil, Rosario Dawson, I thought, was kind of playing that character, but apparently she's not.
Yeah, apparently it was announced when she first was going to be this role that it wasn't the Night Nurse, but it was pulled from a bunch of different
sources. They tease it a little bit because, like in Luke Cage and Daredevil and stuff, they like dropped the name Night Nurse. But
so who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? In 2015, Doctor Strange got his own solo title written by Jason Aaron. It introduces a mystic force that is trying to destroy magic universe by universe. It brings back Baron Mordo again. And it also reveals that magic, or using magic, is damaging Strange's body.
Oh, that's kind of cool. That's a cool little twist on it.
Yeah, I've heard mixed reviews, so I haven't actually gone through it yet. I want to also give a quick overview of Doctor Strange's powers, because he is one of the most powerful characters in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
In this universe, he is also one of the most powerful sorcerers in existence, and he draws much of his power from a group of mystical godlike beings called the Vishanti. And I'm not going to get into the Vishanti, but they are a trio of godlike entities.
Okay.
And a lot of times he channels their power through mystical artifacts. He has an amulet, which is called the Eye of Agamotto.
Eye of Agamotto.
It's in the movie. Yeah. But in the movie, it kind of seems to do one thing. But in the comics, it radiates lights, probes minds, opens dimension portals, pierces illusions, and he uses it all the time. Its power seems boundless in the comics. He also has the Cloak of Levitation, which was also highly featured in the movie, and it allows him to fly without using his own magic. It's that cool red cloak he always wears. He also has the Orb of Agamotto, which is used as an interdimensional surveillance device.
Don't let the NSA get their hands on that one.
No. He also has the Book of Vishanti, which is written by unknown authors. It's the greatest known source of white magical knowledge on Earth and is indestructible. And let me just go through some of his powers. This is not all of them.
Yeah.
Illusion casting, time travel, interdimensional travel, psychic powers, hypnotism, teleportation, energy projection. He's also an athlete and a martial artist.
They always are. You never see any fat, flubby superheroes jumping around New York, do you?
No. No, Marvel doesn't have time for those.
Only villains, the Blob. It's the only fat... That's the only fat, like, I guess super something, super villain that I can think of.
Mm. Yeah, I can't think of any either.
I guess in Watchmen there was the Night Owl, who was chubby.
Watchmen is a different take on it. But that's my quick overview of Doctor Strange.
Very good, Claire. I dug it. I didn't know most of that stuff about him. And he's such a cool character. And I didn't know a lot about Doctor Strange before doing this episode, but... I like him a lot more now. Yeah. He's always intrigued me.
Yeah, and he's so different.
Yeah.
It's fun.
So let me talk to you guys about bringing this movie to life. And it's weird how many times they've attempted a Doctor Strange movie, because it's way more than I would have thought.
Yeah?
Yeah, they've been hammering at this now for a long time. So Strange's first TV appearance was actually in 1978. And in those days, back in the late 70s, Marvel was using these movies on TV, to launch an ongoing series on CBS. So, like, they did one with The Incredible Hulk, Lou Ferrigno's Incredible Hulk.
That was really popular, right?
It was really popular, ran for 6 seasons. They did another one with Amazing Spider-Man in 1977 as well, which was also very popular, though it only ran for 2 seasons. And they were like, all right, third time's a charm. Let's do this again with Doctor Strange.
So random that they would pick Doctor Strange. I guess he was popular.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of a strange choice as well.
A strange choice.
Because there's going to be so many terrible accidental puns in this, I
think. Great accidental puns.
So, yeah, they made a TV movie of Doctor Strange, hoping that it would spiral into an ongoing show. And that was in September 6th of 1978 is when it aired, and it was starring Peter Hooton and Jessica Walters.
Oh, my favorite.
Everyone's favorite. She's such, I mean, if you don't know Jessica Walters, she's the voice of Archer's mom in Archer.
And she plays Lucille Bluth, who is probably one of my favorite characters ever in Arrested Development.
She's such a treat. Well, in the Doctor Strange TV movie, she was the villain. She played Morgan Le Fay. Peter Hooton played Doctor Strange, and the film was directed by Philip DeGuire. And it, unlike The Amazing Spider-Man and The Hulk, it totally flopped.
I heard that's because it aired alongside a little show called Roots.
Sort of. It aired alongside reruns of Roots.
And even that was too much.
And that was, well, it was a very popular show, to be fair to Roots. People loved it. And it was really good. So anyway, yeah, this TV movie flopped. It didn't get a show. Although in reading reviews of it, people did like Jessica Walters' Morgan Le Fay villain.
Why wouldn't you?
It's true. She's great. And after this, there were a bunch of attempts to make Doctor Strange movies that never got out of pre-production. There was an attempt made in 1986 to make a Doctor Strange movie. Then there was another one in 1989, and this one had Stan Lee and Alex Cox writing the script for it. And do you know who axed that film?
Mm-mm.
Warner Brothers.
Oh.
The beef goes deep, Claire. the company that was going to make the film was Regency, and Warner Brothers distributes Regency films, and Warner Brothers and Marvel were in a dispute about merchandising rights at that time. So they were like, no.
No. And Warner Brothers owns all the DC movies.
Warner Brothers owns the DC
franchise,
movies.
I should say.
Yep, the franchise movies over there. So I thought that was especially poignant.
They were trying to sabotage from the beginning.
There was a not quite Doctor Strange film made in 1992 by the straight-to-video company Full Moon Entertainment, and they do a lot of B-horror, sci-fi, fantasy movies. And Full Moon had the screen rights for Doctor Strange for like a hot second, and they wrote a script, and the production was about to start, and then they lost the rights.
How did they do that?
I think they were just bought from them for too much money. So they did like the script, though, that they had made, so they changed some names, and they tweaked a few things around, and they made a movie called Dr. Mordred in 1992, and it's somewhat of a cult classic.
I would love if it was Dr. Strange.
Yeah, that would be pretty funny. So Doctor Strange rights continue to kind of bounce around to all these different movie studios with it almost being almost it almost gets out of pre-production every time, but it never quite does. Wes Craven was signed on to write a script and direct a Doctor Strange movie.
They could do that horror thing.
Yeah, and Wes Craven, for those of you who don't know, he's famous for making the Freddy Krueger films, like that whole franchise. And that was with Savoy Pictures. And then
Columbia. That could be a good cult movie.
Yeah, that could be. It could have been, I mean, it could have been pretty cool. But once again, never made out of pre-production. Rights then bounced over to Columbia, then rights went to Dimension, then to Paramount, then to Miramax, and then finally they went back to Disney Marvel Studios under the Disney umbrella in 2009. And Patrick Dempsey actually at one point was even like really lobbying for this movie to be made with him as the lead role.
And who's Patrick Dempsey? Like, I know the name, but I can't picture him.
He was McDreamy from that doctor show, whatever. What's it?
Grey's Anatomy.
Grey's Anatomy, yeah. And he's been in, like, chick flicks and stuff all over the place.
Enchanted.
And she was in Enchanted. I love Enchanted. He was the lead male in Enchanted.
I'm also going to say, I think Benedict Cumberbatch is probably a better choice than McDreamy.
Who knows? McDreamy could have crushed it, Claire.
I don't know. I've never seen that side of him. So
yeah, but I mean that's true. I was very happy with Benedict Cumberbatch. We'll get to that at the end of the episode. But it was January of 2013 when Kevin Feige, may he reign eternal and supreme, announced that Doctor Strange would appear in some capacity in stage 3 of the Marvel universe.
And Kevin Feige is...
We talk about him a lot. Yeah, he's kind of the architect, the guy who keeps the Marvel movies rolling and making sure that they all fall in together and oversees all of the MCU. It's a big job. The man puts on pretty big pants every morning. So 2013, he announced that Doctor Strange was going to appear, not necessarily in a movie, but in some capacity. Like, they were toying with maybe him coming in on someone else's movie.
All right. Maybe part of the Avengers.
Maybe part of the Avengers, or maybe in Thor Ragnarok. But he got his own movie. And so in June 2014, it was announced that a man named Scott Derrickson would be directing Doctor Strange. Now, Derrickson's previous work is pretty much all in the horror genre. He did the Sinister films, which I'd never seen, and he did The Exorcism of Emily Rose, which I've seen part of, but never actually made it all the way through. And he's always been a huge, huge Doctor Strange fan.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, yeah. And according to Derrickson, when he started lobbying to direct the Doctor Strange movie, Marvel told him that more people had lobbied to direct Doctor Strange than any other Marvel movie that they've ever put out.
I feel like that makes sense, because if you're a visionary director...
Yeah.
You can do so much with Doctor Strange. Yeah. There's no set rules as far as like what it has to look like or...
It makes sense in retrospect, but I remember reading that and being shocked because it was like, really? Doctor Strange is what all those weird directors are clamoring for?
Yeah, all the art school kids are like, we want to direct Doctor Strange.
I don't know where Derrickson went to school, but he looks like an art school kid. So when Derrickson got his meeting with Marvel to pitch his idea for Doctor Strange, he wrote a 12-page scene with his writing partner, Robert Cargill, and illustrated all these storyboards for other different scenes. And for the scene he wrote, he also paid for professional concept art to outline other ideas he had for the movie. He says he spent an obnoxious amount of money on his presentation for Marvel, and it was 90 minutes long.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Like, to hear that the person who's directing this actually really wanted to direct it.
Yeah.
Because you hear so many artists be like, oh, the superhero thing is just so silly. I just do it for the money.
Yeah.
But it's cool that actual nerds who really want this, who grew up with this, are doing it.
Yeah, that are doing, and they really, really love this character. Mm-hmm. And he clearly loves this character. The scene that he actually wrote for that meeting with Marvel was one of the big set pieces in the film, was this big astral projection fight that I won't spoil.
Oh, it was one of my favorite parts of the movie.
Yeah, it's one of the coolest parts of the movie, and it was obviously very influenced by The Oath by Brian K. Vaughan, the comic we just talked about in your segment. And he says he knew that he had to go all out if he really wanted to get Doctor Strange after talking to Joe Russo. The Russo brothers.
Who directed Civil War
and
Captain America.
Captain America Winter Soldier. And he's like, how did you get that film? And Joe Russo was like, look, I went in there and I told them how passionate I was. And I presented my own 90-minute pitch to get this movie. And they saw that like I really wanted it. And so he said once he found that out from Joe Russo, he knew he was going to be the director. Because he's like, no other director wants to do this more than I do. I promise. And his big visual inspirations for the films mostly came right out of the comics, especially of the psychedelic art of Steve Ditko in the 60s run.
That makes sense. Yeah. It looks like it.
Yeah. But he says he wasn't trying to make like this nostalgic, like, oh, the 60s were fun, cool thing. He wanted it to be like you could see the roots of the 60s, but you're not just ogling like clear like Magical Mystery Tour ripoff stuff.
Right. I wasn't transported back to the 60s when I saw it. Like, it was obviously 60s influenced.
Yeah. But it still felt modern.
But it
current.
Felt modern. Yeah. Yeah.
And the same goes for the big mirror-verse fight scene. There's a huge set piece of this, like, they go into this thing called the mirror-verse, and there's a chase, and it's really visually stunning. But he says that he was standing on the shoulders of Chris Nolan and Inception for that.
Yeah, yeah. I can totally see that.
And I have a quote from him from an interview from a Vulture piece where he says, that movie was 7 years ago, he's referring to Inception, but that's a movie that I was inspired by because it wasn't using visual effects for destruction. And I felt like it was the tip of a very interesting iceberg. So my thought was, can we take that to the nth degree and take it way more surreal and way farther? But I certainly owe something to that movie. Which I'd never thought about that before, that like in Inception and in Doctor Strange, the visual effects weren't used for like explosions and stuff. It was used for this M.C. Escher like weird landscapes and cityscapes. It was really, really interesting. So I want to talk about John Spates, who was one of the writers for the film. Him and Cargill and Derrickson wrote the script. And I think he deserves a mention because he's kind of a hotshot screenwriter right now, and I think his name is going to come up in future episodes of our podcast, so I thought he was definitely relevant. Spates is another huge Strange fan, and he lobbied really, really hard to score a writing job on this movie. And Spates had been pestering Marvel since Strange was first announced to like want to work on this project. And after meeting with Marvel, they told his agent that they didn't think that his vision aligned with theirs. And when Spates found this out, Spates told his agent, don't take that answer, call them back, tell them there's a lot of right answers, and get me back in that room. Like, he wanted to be a part of this movie so badly.
I love that. I said it earlier. That's so cool.
Yeah. And so the big reason I want to mention him is that he wrote the script for Passengers, which is an upcoming film with Jennifer Lawrence and Chris Pratt.
Yeah.
It's a sci-fi film. And that script, which was written a while ago, it appeared on a Hollywood blacklist in 2007, which is a list of Hollywood's most admired scripts that haven't been greenlit. And it's been in and out of production for a long time, and it's finally being made. He also wrote the script for Prometheus, though it was heavily edited, the final cut of it. He's writing a script for a new Mummy film, an adventure horror Mummy film. And he's working on, it says his baby project right now is a film adaptation of The Forever War, which is a famous sci-fi book by author Joe Haldeman.
Hardcore nerd.
Yeah, so, and he mostly is known for writing science fiction scripts. So him like jumping onto Doctor Strange was something a little different for him. And I think, yeah, he definitely deserves a mention, seeing as some of these scripts, if they get made, we're probably going to be talking about.
We'll come back to you.
Yeah. So just little facts and figures about the film. It had a budget of $165 million. It's grossed, as of yesterday, $87.7 million.
And yesterday was the Saturday after
yesterday
it opened.
Yesterday was the Saturday after it opened. So it's on track to do well. My theater was packed. I don't know about yours.
I saw it in the afternoon. It was pretty busy for a Saturday at 12.
Yeah.
It wasn't completely full.
Yeah. And score-wise, it's got a 90% critic score on Rotten Tomatoes and a 91% audience score. So critically, it's doing really, really well. What did you think of it, Claire?
I enjoyed it. I didn't love it.
Yeah.
Like, it was fine.
Yeah.
But I don't know if this just doesn't appeal to me as much.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I liked it too. I love the visuals, and I feel like that's a big thing that a lot of reviewers have harped on, that like the story was okay, but the visuals were really, really incredible.
The visuals were so cool, and we kind of touched on this earlier, but I thought it was so interesting and so cool that they were able to really keep the aesthetic of the comics.
Yeah.
Having read a decent amount of the comics and doing all this research for the podcast, I feel like they did capture the essence of Doctor Strange.
I think they did too. I think they did a great job like keeping Doctor Strange true to who he was in the comics. And not everything is exactly the same. Obviously, Tilda Swinton as the Ancient One was like, there's a big controversy over that, this whitewashing thing, which is a big deal, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You want to see more people of color in these comic book movies. It's starting to get kind of old, these white men saving the day every time.
And instead you have Tilda Swinton.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought she was good as the Ancient One. I do think it is a departure from what the Ancient One is in the comics.
Yeah.
And Tilda Swinton definitely has a presence, but I do think in the comics the presence of this very elderly,
all-knowing dude.
Man,
yeah.
Be that a stereotype in itself.
Yeah.
It is a thing. The Eastern influence within the yeah. comics as well.
Yeah. I thought this was probably the best casting I've seen. And it's my favorite casting of any Marvel film.
Like, is that just because of Benedict Cumberbatch?
No, it's because of all of them. I know we just mentioned Tilda Swinton like in the whitewashing controversy, but I loved her. I loved Chiwetel Ejiofor. I love Mads Mikkelsen. Mads Mikkelsen plays the villain.
The villain.
What's his name? Caecius?
Yeah. I also, we talked about this earlier. The villain doesn't have a lot of to do. Like, he's not a very fleshed out villain, and you don't really care.
Yeah.
I think that was probably part of my problem, is that I wasn't invested in the story so much.
Yeah, yeah. You're right. The Marvel, I feel like, has had a villain problem for a long time, where they just can't get a good, solid, like, villain, you know, and they get good actors. Unless it's Wilson Fisk. But, like, it's not like they have bad actors. Like, I love Mads Mikkelsen, and I love Tom Hiddleston as Loki.
He was considered a good villain.
Yeah, he's one of, like, the better ones, but they just don't, that's where those movies are lacking.
And superhero villains are hard, because even in the comics, unless they're really fleshed out, they are one-dimensional. Like, a good example of a fleshed-out villain is when Doctor Doom and Doctor Strange go to hell. You get to know Doctor Doom. Yeah. And I think that's part of the reason I liked Civil War so much, because I guess the villain was a little bit one-dimensional, but it felt like the conflict was earned.
The conflict was real, yeah.
Yeah, and it was well-rounded, and you knew the characters really well. And we were talking about, like, the origin story fatigue and the one-dimensional villain fatigue. I think I felt that watching this.
Yeah, it did really, as much as, like, we're talking about its flaws, it did really excite me, for reinvigorate my love for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I'm so happy they're doing this. What about Benedict Cumberbatch? You liked him, right?
Oh, of course. Yeah, I mean, you said the casting was really good. Yeah. Everyone, Benedict Wong, who plays Wong, I loved. Yeah. I thought he was great.
I wish he had a bigger role. That was my only qualm with
it
Wong
looked
this
like
movie.
He was going to have a bigger role, though. And they are putting a lot into this movie. There's a whole, it's not just the Marvel universe.
Yeah.
That they're, it's part of the Marvel universe, so you know some things, but they're introducing this whole other aspect.
It's a whole other dimension.
Yeah. And I loved, there were some parts of the movie, the part you were talking about that the director used to pitch the movie.
Yeah.
That scene is so cool, and it's pulled directly from my favorite Doctor Strange comic, and I got chills when I saw it. It's here.
It was really, really,
really,
well
really
done.
Good.
The Cumberbatch, they actually had to, they were like fighting to get him. This movie was supposed to come out over the summer, but they wanted Benedict Cumberbatch so bad, they pushed the movie back further. Work with his schedule so he could be in it.
He's a really good choice.
Yeah, he is. He's great. And there was music for the first time in a Marvel film. There was music in this film.
You know, I didn't notice it, actually.
Oh, really?
I know you are more prone to it.
Yeah,
listening. I listen to music. I feel like you notice it more than I do.
He had a prominent theme that was, like, put up front, this very, like, arpeggiated, like, kind of weird-sounding song. And they also used a Pink Floyd song. They used a Interstellar Overdrive, which is the Sid Barrett era Pink Floyd.
That's a good choice for Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
So do you recommend people see this movie?
Yes, I definitely do, actually. Like, I feel like we talked a little bit down on it and the opinions here, but I did really, really like it. I thought it was so visually cool.
I feel like if you're a Marvel fan, then you should go see it. And I would see it in theaters because cinematically, it's just so cool.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's a lot of why I see movies in theaters, to get that full effect.
Yeah.
But if you're not a Marvel fan, this isn't the movie that's going to sway you, I think.
Thank you all so much for listening. Once again, I'm Kyle Willoughby.
And I'm Claire White.
And we are Dragons, Sexy Robots, and Adventures, A Nerd Manual. Feel free to contact us on our website at dsrapodcast.com. And we would love it if you could rate and review us on iTunes, because who doesn't love a rate and review on iTunes?
If it's a good one.
If it's a good one. Only good ones. You can find the show on Twitter at dsrapodcast. I can be found on Twitter at klex303. That's K-L-E-X-303.
I can be found at Along With Claire. That's C-L-A-I-R-E.
And you can find our producer, James, at James Fowey Jr. That's James Fowey, F-O-U-H-E-Y-J-R. You can learn more about Dr. Strange on our Facebook page, where we will be posting some of our show notes. Our producer, who wishes he had Dr. Strange's power of illusion so he could hide his hideous, hideous body, is James Fowey. Our logo was done by Patty Hyland, who really wishes she had Dr. Strange's sweet Bleecker Street mansion. It's not even an apartment, it's a mansion. I don't know how he affords that thing. Patty Hyland, one day. And our theme was composed by Pete Rowan, who I know is really jealous of Dr. Strange's sweet goatee. Once again, this is Dragons, Sexy Robots, and Adventures, a Nerd Manual. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.